Hello, welcome back to the Squawker Talker podcast. Thanks for downloading and returning to us and listening to what we have to say about football each and every week. My name's Greg Evans, and this week we're going to be previewing the big Champions League fixtures that are on show this Tuesday and Wednesday night. Last week we saw the likes of PSG, Chelsea and Real Madrid in action. There were some good results, but I think this week is what we've all been waiting for. There's some real heavyweights on the show. We've got Arsenal versus Barcelona, Juventus versus Bayern Munich, Dynamo Kiev versus Manchester City and PSV Eindhoven versus Atletico Madrid. This week I'm joined by freelance football journalist Mohamed Butt. How are you, Mohamed?
I'm doing well, Greg, thanks. How are you?
Brilliant, thanks. Thanks for joining us. I'm looking forward to what you've got to say on Pep Guardiola and Barcelona. We're also joined by the freelancer. We've got Lewis Ambrose. How are you, Lewis?
Yeah, good, thanks. Cheers for inviting me on.
No, it's a pleasure to have you here. I'm sure you've got a few good things to say about the Gunners and what they can do against Barcelona on Tuesday. And we've also got a man who's on for his podcast hat-trick today. We've got Squawker Dave back. How are you, Dave?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Hopefully it was the perfect hat-trick. Left foot, right foot and the header.
Brilliant, Dave, brilliant. So we're going to kick off with probably one of the biggest games of the season, I think it is. Barcelona versus Arsenal at the Emirates on Tuesday night. They've played each other a countless amount of times in the past few seasons. And this sort of fixture's a tricky time, I think, for Arsenal. They've only won five games in 2016 so far. And it looks like a case of history repeating itself in the Champions League for Barcelona. They've lost the last five, last 16 ties, losing to Barcelona, AC Milan, they've lost to Bayern Munich twice, and of course lost to Monaco last year. They did progress to the quarterfinals in the 2009-10 season, but they once again lost to Barcelona 6-3 on aggregate. Lewis, do you think Arsenal have got a chance in this match? And if so, do they need to replicate the sort of performance that they put in against Bayern Munich earlier in the season?
Well, Arsenal don't have a big chance to go through against Barcelona, who are obviously the huge favourites, but there is always a chance. And yeah, I think replicating that sort of, maybe not the performance so much, but the result against Bayern Munich in October is exactly what Arsenal need to do on Tuesday. Keep it tight at the back. Not conceding an away goal would be enormous, impossible as it seems, and a win to go to the new camp with something to play for. You know, I don't think people are particularly hopeful, but a lot of it rests on Tuesday night's result. I'd say that a similar sort of setup to the Bayern Munich game is in order because Arsenal can't control possession, certainly not against a team like Barcelona, and we'll have to keep it tight, hope Barcelona don't score and hit them on the break.
Barcelona beat Las Palmas 2-1 the weekend. It's a bit of a struggle for them, really, down in Gran Canaria. Suarez and Neymar with the goals. Las Palmas are down in 18th in La Liga. So you would think they'd perform a little bit better against a team like that. But Mo, do you think that fixture against Las Palmas gives Arsenal any hope? Can they possibly overcome this colossus of a football team?
I don't think the Las Palmas game does really give them much hope in as much as, I mean, there's two factors at play. Well, three factors at play behind the performance, really. The main thing is, one is it's a colossal distance away. Las Palmas is, I think it's twice as far away from Barcelona as London is from Barcelona. So it's an enormous amount of travelling. It was a 4 p.m. game, you know, and more specifically, Piqué and Busquets didn't play in that game. And those two are so fundamental to everything Barcelona do in building the ball from the back and starting attacks that, without them, when Piqué plays, Mascherano and Alves become better passers of the ball. And when Busquets plays, the whole midfield is transformed because he's got that ability to simultaneously thread passes through himself, but also make his midfield partners that much better. And neither of them played. Busquets was suspended. Piqué was rested for the Arsenal game. So I think they're both going to play against Arsenal, barring some last-minute injury in training or something. So I think that Barcelona will be an entirely different animal. More to the point, Luis Enrique's Barcelona have been incredible in cup ties, whereas Pep Guardiola's Barcelona, not so much away from home. Luis Enrique's Barca have been imperious. They've only not won three cup ties, three games, and two of them were dead rubbers. So I don't know. It's sad to say for Arsenal, but I don't think there's much hope at all.
Yeah, Barcelona now unbeaten 32 games, which is pretty incredible. It's a club record. Dave, what do you think Arsenal can possibly do to stop the powers that are Neymar, Suarez and Lionel Messi?
I think that's a big, big test for this Arsenal team, this Arsenal defence. You look at Hector Bellerin, you look at Monreal, they've got, you know, big, big games, Neymar, Messi, obviously their opponents. But sort of mirroring what Mo was saying about Sergio Busquets, he didn't play against Las Palmas and he's so, so crucial to this Barcelona team. It was total chaos in midfield. In front of the back four, Barcelona just couldn't get any control. If you look at the Barcelona midfield that started, Iniesta as sort of a left central midfielder, Turan as a right central midfielder and Sergio Roberto sitting in behind. There was a number of issues with that midfield. Firstly, Turan, I don't think he's a central midfielder. He's more of a wide player, you know, playing at Atletico. He played wide left, wide right. And he sort of, when he plays central midfield, he makes that move a little bit too early to the wide right position, which caused Barcelona a number of problems in the middle. The Messi kept on coming deeper because obviously Turan going out, Messi was coming in deeper and deeper. And that's not where you want Lionel Messi. You want him in the penalty area. Also, Dani Alves didn't have the greatest of games, obviously, with the natural width that Turan was giving. That Alves outlet ball where he's overlapping the central midfielder and joining, you know, linking with Messi didn't quite work. Also sort of Sergio Roberto, I thought he was didn't have the greatest of games at defensive midfield. He's probably, you know, he's been the best utility player in Europe this season, played every position apart from centre-back and in goal. But I feel this number six role at Barcelona at the moment in Enrique's team is it's a bit too specialised and he lacked the awareness that Busquets usually has. You know, Busquets is so, so good at going out there, nicking the ball. He knows when to press, he knows when to hold. You know, look at the stats in the Champions League. No player has made more interceptions in the opposition half than Sergio Busquets this season. So it just shows us how crucial he is. And the goal that Las Palmas scored, it was created in the number 10 slot. If Busquets was there, it's an area that he dominates and that's just not going to happen. Either the pass is going to get intercepted before it gets there or he's going to make a big, big tackle. So with Busquets in the side, I just can't see anything for Arsenal. Now, if he can limit Mesut Özil's sort of you know ability to play on the break, you know, Arsenal aren't going to have much going forward.
Mo, you seem to think that they're... Well, Arda Turan's not going to be playing tomorrow. He's suspended. Do you think Arsenal could possibly exploit Ivan Rakitic in the midfield?
Maybe. I was just to play off what Dave said, actually, because he mentioned Arda making that move to drift wide. And it's true, Arda does that quite a lot. But I think if you look at Barcelona under Luis Enrique, even Rakitic does that a lot as well. He often plays very wide and then Messi pulls infield. And I think the original, Luis Enrique's original idea was to have Messi behind Neymar and Suarez in a sort of narrow 3-4-1-2 formation, which didn't work out for various reasons. But I still think this season we've seen a lot of Messi pulling central behind Suarez and interacting more as a trio rather than last season, of course, when he was much more permanently affixed to the right wing. And I think part of me thinks that maybe the idea of Luis Enrique chasing Nolito is that he wants to have Messi behind three forwards. So I'm thinking we'll probably see, even if Rakitic will start, it won't be Arda Turan, but I think we'll still see Rakitic pull wide against Arsenal a lot and Messi will come in behind Suarez and try and cause havoc there, linking with Neymar as well.
I think what's kind of crucial with Rakitic compared to Turan is Turan's making that move in attack. You know, he's going out to those wide areas quite early on. When you see Rakitic play that role, he doesn't go to the byline straight away. He'll sort of drift, you know, right centre, but he'll link the play. But what he's so good at is covering the sort of the defence when Messi's pushed up. He'll obviously drift wide and sort of, you know, cover the fullback and so forth. I feel that helps Messi and it does help Barcelona when they're going forward. I just feel that maybe the signing of Turan, it's a little bit questionable. Do Barcelona need someone like Arda Turan when they've potentially got three players in the forward positions where he should kind of play that are a lot better than him? So I don't know. It's going to be really interesting to see how this works, but definitely Rakitic is going to be so, so crucial.
Brilliant. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, definitely would agree with that. I can't... he does defend transitions much, much better. And I think Dani Alves notably is another one that really suffers when Rakitic doesn't play because he does a lot of work to cover Dani Alves, who just doesn't... I mean, you know what he's like. He never wanted to defend even when he was at his imperious best 5 years ago. Definitely doesn't want to defend anymore.
There is one man who might be able to stop Barcelona, I think, and that's Petr Cech in goal for Arsenal. And in the past 8 games where he's faced Lionel Messi, mainly for Chelsea, obviously, Lionel Messi couldn't score against the big Czech goalkeeper. Obviously, Messi, Neymar and Suarez have now scored an incredible 91 goals between them this season. Lewis, do you think Petr Cech's going to have a very busy night on Tuesday?
I imagine he will, yeah. Arsenal's 2 previous games at home against Barcelona have seen Manuel Almunia and Wojciech Szczesny look very, very busy and very good, actually, shot-stopping, and that is what Cech excels at. For his size, he hasn't got the best command of his box always, but that won't be so much of an issue. We don't expect Barcelona to be floating the ball in So when they're working around the box, when they're trying to get inside the box, he's going to be huge if Arsenal are going to have any hope of going back out to Spain with anything to play for. You'd think he probably does have to keep a clean sheet. He did against Bayern at home. He made a couple of great saves from Thiago and from Lewandowski. But if he stops Messi again, he's going to have to stop Neymar, Suarez, Iniesta as well. And that's the worry.
Yeah, it's going to be a real, real challenge for Arsenal on Tuesday. But you never know. They beat Barcelona, back in 2011. Of course, they lost the next leg. But there's definitely hope there. And with players like Ozil and Sanchez on the pitch, you never know. At the same time, annoyingly, I'm really annoyed that these games happened both at the same time on Tuesday. But at the same time, we've got Juventus versus Bayern Munich down in Turin. And Guardiola has a weird record in Champions League away games. He's failed to win 20 away games since his Champions League debut as Barcelona manager in the 2008-2009 season. Mo, do you think that could help Juventus? Could they get a big lead in this?
I don't know about big lead, but I think that's definitely a huge factor, and it's going to be a big advantage for Juventus. Pep's record in away games in Europe in the group stages, it's actually pretty respectable. He's won 15, he's lost 2, and he's drawn 4. He didn't actually lose one until playing City last season in the groups, and the other one was the loss to Arsenal this year. So in the group stages, it's very good. But in the knockout rounds, it's he's won 4, drawn 6, and lost 8. He very much is a win-it-at-home kind of guy in a very sort of old-school way. And I think, coupled with the fact that he's basically missing his entire battery of central defenders, I don't even know who he's going to start next to Serdar Tashi in the game. I would suspect Juve have a very good chance of upsetting them here. I don't know about maybe a big advantage after all. It's Manuel Neuer in goal. But yeah, they're definitely going to hand a huge advantage to Juventus in this.
So Juventus now unbeaten in 16 games in Serie A. That winning streak, though, that they had in the Italian top flight, which was pretty amazing, which was 15 consecutive games in a row, came to an end on Friday night. They could only draw 0-0 with Bologna. And they managed to get no shots on target against their opponents in that match. It was the first time in 5 years that they failed to do that. Lewis, obviously Guardiola is in his last season now at Bayern Munich. He's going to Manchester City in the summer. Do you think he's not won a European competition with Bayern yet? He's come close, obviously, but is this a last big statement for him at the Allianz Arena?
Yeah, on a personal level as well. I think everybody knows he's obsessed really with being a perfectionist, and Guardiola won't want to walk away without winning the Champions League, without leaving that trophy at Bayern again, especially after the team he was left with, the success they had under Jupp Heynckes winning the treble in his final season. Guardiola's he's run away with the Bundesliga 2 years in a row, and looks like it'll be a third year in a row doing the exact same thing. But as long as he hasn't won the Champions League at Bayern, he's under a lot of pressure because he will be seen as a failure, unbelievably. In the German media, there's a lot of pressure. And as for this midweek against Juventus, they're without pretty much all of their defenders. There's no Boateng, no Benatia, there's no Bad Stuber. Kimmich and Serdar Tashi started at centre-back at the weekend. He subbed Serdar Tashi off on his debut after under an hour for David Alaba in the middle. He'll probably play Kimmich and Alaba again. And I think Juventus will probably really look to exploit that and could end Guardiola's season already, effectively.
It's going to be a huge game for both clubs, really. I think Juventus have probably come to this at the right stage. They've only lost 2 games at home this season in all competitions, to Udinese and Sevilla. And both teams have actually only conceded 3 goals each in the group stages of the competition. Dave, do you think that Max Allegri's team have got any chance of basically transferring their dominance in Serie A to the Champions League?
Tactically, a massive, massive fan of Allegri. He's very, very reactive in a defensive mindset. We saw against Napoli, he switched to a flat 4-4-2, which, you know, the media didn't really see coming. And it was sort of to cater for the lack of Chiellini, obviously out injured at the moment. But Barzagli and Bonucci are so, so good. But it's going to be interesting to see whether Allegri goes for a back 3 or a back 4 again. I'd quite like to see a back 3. I think that'd work well against Bayern Munich. You know, you consider the amount of runners from midfield, Thomas Muller, you know, wherever Douglas Costa's going to come from, Lewandowski, you've got to keep a watch on. So I'd like to have three centre-halves in there, probably Barzagli, Bonucci and Regani. But obviously it's the two guys that you want to look for is Paul Pogba, who's been in fantastic form this season. For me, he's really becoming that player that everyone sort of sees him at. Really interesting, statistically, only two players in Serie A have had more shots on him than goal, you know, Insigne and Gonzalo Higuain. So that's sort of seeing his attacking input in a way. Against Chievo, for example, on two occasions, he picked up the ball on the halfway line with around six defenders between him and the goal, got a shot away. Pretty incredible stuff from Pogba. And obviously Dybala, another player that this season has taken it to the next level in terms of assists, in terms of goals. He's really stepping up to the sort of Carlos Tevez boots that he had to. So it'd be interesting to see them on the counter-attack, because if they sit deep, they've got so much pace to burn on the break. You know, with Pogba, with Dybala, two players that can instantly add pace into the attack. And I think that with these two Bayern centre-backs, it's kind of looking the way that Juventus, in a way, are a little bit the favourites in this tie for me.
Interesting points, Dave. Mo, you think that Bayern might get a bit of luck out on the basically out on the wings with their notable pace?
Yeah, I think that. I mean, I agree with the idea of Dave's idea of having a back three to then pack the central areas and stop runners from midfield like Thomas Muller, who is just incredible. But I think that would be almost suicidal given the pace Bayern have at wide and the emphasis Guardiola has put on wide play this season. Often they've been playing, whatever the starting lineup has, it's often functionally been three at the back and essentially four wide players, wingers and then two forwards going out wide. And unlike previous seasons, unlike last season when Ribéry and Robben were either injured or, you know, not playing, you know, they've got Douglas Costa and Kingsley Coman, who of course is on loan from Juventus. And that's just tremendous, tremendous pace in wide areas, which I think if they're playing a back three, it would very quickly become a back five. And that would really neuter Juve's ability to play on the break. And I just think that would be, I think if Juve are going to win this game, they have to play a four at the back. They have to play narrow and hold, you know, hold the central area, but they cannot afford to play three at the back and give Bayern any channels into those wide areas. It would just be suicidal.
I think what we've seen from Juve, though, this year is that, you know, the fact like Lichtsteiner, who's been in absolutely fantastic form since coming back from injury, and Patrice Evra, if it does go to a back five, I wouldn't be too worried if I was a, you know, a Juventus fan, because the break, how Juve sort of broke this year is in the wide areas. Dybala sort of drifting right centre, and then Paul Pogba left centre. So if they're counter-attacking with, you know, those three players, whoever plays up front, whether it is Morata or Mandzukic, probably will be Morata. I think Mandzukic is out injured. But it would be quite interesting to see Juventus counter-attack this Bayern side, because they're obviously, like you were saying, Bayern are playing this three at the back. If Juve could stretch them, there's going to be so many avenues for creating chances there. They'll sit with that five, you know, with Marchisio holding in front, and then, you know, the other central midfielder, whether it be Schiraro or you know, whoever sort of jumps in there. I just think that Juve have got such, you know, potential on the break. Those three players, Pogba, Morata and Dybala, I just think they could tear anyone apart, especially this Bayern defence.
Yeah, the counter-attack is, well, as it often is with Guardiola's sides, what Bayern will have to look out for, especially if they try and control the game like you'd probably expect them to. It's just the fact that I don't know if you can sort of go with solid formations without the idea of changing throughout the game against Bayern, because Guardiola, when he sees a problem during the match, he'll change instantly. He's played Alaba a lot, for instance, this season, even at left back, but he becomes an auxiliary central midfielder from left back, and Thiago drops deeper to cover him and also control the game and keep the ball on the break. The other big thing for Bayern will probably be Manuel Neuer, who's not been as outlandish coming outside of his box this season as we've seen before, but I think that'll be called upon, especially with Alaba and Kimmich at the back, as we expect. So I just think maybe such a mindset like saying they should play three at the back, for example, control the central areas, I think Guardiola will then put more emphasis on the wing play. And likewise, if you try and cut out the wingers, he'll put more emphasis in the middle, and it will be really a case of in-game management for both Allegri and Guardiola to see who can come out on top.
I think what we've seen with Allegri over the past like season and a half, that he's so diverse in his tactics. You know, go back to the semi-final last season, started with that narrow 4-4-2 diamond, then, you know, obviously took the lead, went to a 3-5-2, and then eventually played a 3-6-1. I think when Guardiola makes a change, Allegri is just going to mirror that in terms of defensive-wise, whether he has to stack more centrally or stack more out wide. So it's going to be a great battle, and I can't wait to see it.
It's a shame that it is happening in the last 16. It almost feels like a final. Two of the best teams in Europe facing each other already. I can't wait to see what happens. But as I say, it's annoying that it's happening at the same time as Arsenal-Barcelona. So those are the Tuesday night fixtures. We're going to look at Wednesday night now. It's not as glamorous, but there's still some interesting ties there. We'll kick off with Dynamo Kiev versus Manchester City over in the Ukraine. Manchester City on a bit of a poor run at the moment. They lost the last three games. 10 goals conceded in those matches as well. Obviously, they were playing a lot of youngsters against Chelsea in the FA Cup on Sunday. They've never actually reached the quarterfinals of the competition. This is their fifth time of asking, which is pretty astonishing considering the players that they've had at their disposal over the years. Dave, what do you think to Manchester City at the moment? Is Pellegrini sort of coasting, knowing that he's going to be out of a job in the summer? And they're looking a bit of a spent force. So a lot of older players in that squad now. I think they're probably the favourites for this match, but can we see them do anything else in the competition?
I think firstly, if we can question the selection at the weekend, was that a Pellegrini selection or was that a Manchester City board with Guardiola coming in to see these young players at a, you know, against a tougher opponent? You know, going on to Manchester City, I feel that it's a case of too many number 10s in that side. You know, I'd class Sterling, Silva, Yaya Toure and Kevin De Bruyne before he was injured as number 10s. And Pellegrini was trying to smuggle all these players into the same side. For me, City have got to go back to the basics. I'd get Silva in the hole, Sterling sort of out left, and then Jesus Navas on the right, and then Fernando and Fernandinho in central midfield. I would get rid of Yaya Toure. I think that his, you know, effectiveness in the bigger games is tiring. He's only good for about 10 minutes of the game. The rest of it, he's bad in defence. He's not contributing to the attack. So I think that with this City side, they need to get the workers back in. They need James Milner back. You know, why let James Milner go? A player that was so crucial to them in the big games. He was arguably man of the match last season against both ties against Chelsea, who obviously went on to win the league. So for me, it's got to be a structured City that can play on the counter-attack, go to the Ukraine, play on the break, come back to Man City and then obviously score some goals there. But obviously they've got Aguero up front as well, who is starting to rekindle that form that we all love to see.
One big plus for Manchester City in this match is the fact that Dynamo Kiev have not played a competitive game now since December 9th when they beat Maccabi Tel Aviv in their last Champions League group stage. They only conceded four goals in the group. They're unbeaten at home in the competition. Obviously a decent team. They've got some good players like Miguel Veloso, Alexander Dragovic, Andriy Yarmolenko. He's scored 13 goals in the competitions this season. Obviously, you mentioned Raheem Sterling there, Dave. He's scored three goals for City in the competition this season. He's their top scorer. Lewis or Mo, do you think Dynamo Kiev are going to cause Man City any problems, or can you see it being sort of another disappointing night for City over in Kiev?
I think they definitely can cause Manchester City problems. I think Manchester City, the way they've played this season, anybody can cause them problems. They've not won consecutive league games since October. They haven't looked good for much of the campaign, really. Dynamo Kiev were pretty good defensively in the group stage. They kept a clean sheet against Chelsea, and they only conceded four goals in the entire group stage. One of them was an own goal at Stamford Bridge. They've not played competitively, like you said, since December, but since then they have played 13 friendlies. And we always see British teams, English teams struggling when they go out to Ukraine or to Russia. So I don't think it'll be easy. And I think City will be happy to come away with a draw, to be honest.
I actually disagree. I think City are going to win this, and they're going to win it not comfortably, but I don't think they'll be troubled too much. Dynamo Kiev, they've played friendlies, but the only good side they played in that whole friendly run was Malaga, who put out something of a B team and beat them 2-0. So I'm just wary of Dynamo Kiev. They didn't actually really make Chelsea suffer that much, and Chelsea were terrible back then as well. Let's not forget, this is when they were right in the middle of their meltdown. So I'm not entirely sure they really have much of a chance here. They might eke a draw out of the home leg, but they'll probably get smashed in Manchester. Despite Pellegrini's tactical tomfoolery, there is just far too much firepower in the Man City side. Unless Aguero gets injured, like in the warm up or something, I find it very hard. And even then, Iheanacho has been in pretty solid form. They could probably win it with him up front. That's not to disparage Dynamo Kiev's quality, but they're just not on the same planet, and they've not been in the best of form in these friendlies anyway. Like I said, lost to Malaga. So
this match will be played behind closed doors due to some racist chanting from the Kiev fans back in October against Chelsea, which we don't like to see at all. And actually, City played in very similar circumstances last season against CSKA Moscow, and I think they came out with a draw in that match. They didn't get the result they wanted anyway. So the last match on Tuesday, we'll see the Dutch champions, PSV Eindhoven, take on Atletico Madrid. We saw PSV do okay in the group stages. They've obviously not missed the qualities of Georginio Wijnaldum and Memphis Depay, who left the club in the summer. Mo, you've noticed a potential similarity between the current Atletico Madrid side and the PSV Eindhoven team that won the European Cup back in 1988. What is it?
Oh, just that PSV won that title, won that Champions League without winning a game in the quarterfinals, semi-finals, and finals. They drew all the games and won it on penalties. And I just think like this Atletico Madrid is such a strong defensive side. I think there's every possibility they could do the same thing, which, before you say that, sounds ridiculous. As long as someone else eliminates Barcelona, I think it's entirely possible. They've only conceded 11 league goals this season, which is the same as Bayern Munich, who play in the notoriously uncompetitive Bundesliga. And it's less than PSG, who play in the even less competitive Ligue 1. And four of those 11 goals were scored by Barcelona. So as long as someone else takes those guys out, I think there's every chance that Atletico Madrid could just bore us all to death and 0-0 their way to this trophy. They are such an incredible defensive unit. It's unreal.
No, the Bundesliga is boring. It's uncompetitive. Are you crazy? You've seen Thomas Tuchel's Borussia Dortmund come back. You know, Roger Schmidt's doing a cracking job at Leverkusen. Gladbach are looking good again. Come on, mate.
No, I love the Bundesliga. It's great fun to watch, but ultimately, no, they're all playing for second to Bayern Munich, is what I mean. No one's really challenging Bayern. Even Tuchel's Dortmund, who are fantastic, by the way. Aubameyang has just been incredible for the last two seasons. Even they, when they came up against Bayern Munich, just wilted under the spotlight. It's Pep Guardiola's Bayern Munich are just a completely different animal compared to normal Bayern Munich, who would do that up-down thing. One season they're great, one season they finish like third or something. Under Pep, Bayern Munich are such a machine in the Bundesliga. It's not competitive. They're obviously going to win it. Everyone's just playing for second. And I just think, and you compare the goals conceded record, and for Atletico, who play in La Liga with two of the most inhuman strike forces, goal scoring machines in the world of football. You know, to have 11 goals conceded, that's just outrageous.
Lads, this is niche banter. So, we're going to wrap up. But I just want to have a quick look back at the PSV Eindhoven team that finished. They got to semi-finals back in 2005. They lost to AC Milan, of course, the AC Milan team who lost to Liverpool in that famous final. But listen to this team that they had for that semi-final. The second leg, they won 3-1, I should add. This team was Aurelio Gomez, who's obviously now at Watford, doing very well. They had Theo Lucius, they had Alex, who played for Chelsea, obviously. They had Wilfried Boomer, they had Lee Yong-Pyo, who went on to play for Tottenham, and Borussia Dortmund. The captain was Mark van Bommel. They had Johan Vogel, Philip Cocu, who's now their manager. Man United cult hero Park Ji-sung was in there. The man with probably the best name in football ever up front, Jan Vennegård Hesselink, and alongside him was Peruvian legend Jefferson Farfan. I mean, that is one hell of a team. That is like, that's like a football manager heaven, almost, I would say.
It was a very, very much a cult side. That them and Leon in that period of time were like this really sort of, they had this really cool side that you could really get behind, but you knew they were never going to win it all, but oh, maybe they were. And then, I mean, they came so close. Milan basically almost telling us, yeah, we're going to bottle it if we get a chance in the final. And of course they did in the end, didn't they? But, you know, from a comfortable 2-0 win to that horror show in Eindhoven, oh, it would have been so nice if PSV had made the final, to be honest. They might have actually beaten Liverpool, to be honest.
Controversial views there, Mo. we'll come to the end of today's pod. Dave, do you have anything you want to push? Only your Twitter handle?
No, it's all good, mate.
Lewis, how about you? What are you up to at the moment?
Writing stuff generally, and I guess follow me on Twitter at LG Ambrose.
Mo, do you want to plug your Twitter handle as well?
I'm just about to write a piece for Squawker about Hector Bellerin, actually, and his remarkable accomplishments. Oh, and my Twitter handle is Machine Gun, obviously.
Brilliant. Thanks, guys. Thanks for joining me again. And this Friday, we're going to be previewing the Capital One Cup final between Liverpool and Manchester City, which is going to be a big game for both clubs, I reckon. And so yeah, thanks for listening again today. Please remember to subscribe to us on iTunes and give us a rating. It really helps the podcast climb up that mysterious algorithm that Apple have put on there. And you can also listen to us on Acast. The podcast will also be on the Squawker website. And you can listen to some of the older episodes on there as well. But thanks for joining me today. We hope to see you all again soon. Many thanks. Bye.